Are we rolling?
Yeah, Vesna's Love Life.
Oh.
We're starting, right? We'll start there.
Yikes. It's terrible.
Okay.
It's sad.
Can we get two serious facts and one funny fact about your love life?
Two truths and a lie.
Even better.
That's going to take a while.
Because you're a bad liar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we just played that game with the kids last night. Not about love life.
Hey,
they're you know, judge. Almost 9 and 11. I guess they have crushes and stuff, but they don't tell me about it. But we're all pretty bad at the game. I'm pretty good at it.
You're a terrible.
And then yeah,
which is a good thing.
Lindy thought for 10 minutes and then ended up listing two truths and forgot to even give a lie. And then the kids, yeah, they weren't super good at it. So
yeah,
two truths and a lie. We could start with that.
This is my icebreaker. I have an icebreaker.
Yeah, go ahead.
What Disney character most represents you? Like, if you think of all the Disney movies, all the Pixar movies, what Disney character most represents you?
Ooh. Do you have an answer? I got one for me, I think.
I'm going to go with the pig. Or no, not the pig, but
that's
the...
A good start.
You going Lion King?
Mr. Potato Head from Toy Story.
What?
Oh, shit. Okay.
Break That's a Pixar movie. That's not Disney.
Yeah, it is.
No, Disney Pixar. Yeah, you're right. Why Mr. Potato Head?
Yeah. He's kind of sarcastic. He's a little out of shape. He's brown. He's funny.
You can wear different parts.
Sure.
Yeah.
Versatile. CEOs comment when they see you.
Yeah, CEO. I've been appointed that title.
Self-appointed.
Well, actually, you nominated me.
Let's backtrack a little bit.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Disney movie?
Well, I was going to answer Simba.
Okay.
I was going to go with Simba. I feel like he was a cautious, aspiring leader who waited for his right moment to pounce on the throne.
Wow.
It's almost like he couldn't wait to become king.
I don't feel that way about him, about me. He felt that way about him. Mm. He did, because he sang that song, but... I think for me, I guess my first thought is Simba. I love The Lion King. It was a great movie. Vesna, how about you? What's your Disney character, your doppelganger, or your inspiration?
I don't know about a Disney character. That's going to take a while for me to think about. But favorite Disney movie is Lion King.
Mm. Is Lion King. Okay. What?
It's one of the first movies that I've seen. Well, no, not really, but...
Nala or... Rafiki, maybe, because you're like sage and you have wisdom and all that stuff.
Sure.
Rafiki, I don't know what was he even. What did he even look like?
He was the not the baboon, but he was the old one with the cane.
Oh.
What about like Belle?
Wow. What an honor.
No, what's that ugly stepsister one?
Oh, I see what we're doing.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Cinderella.
No, Cinderella.
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 Yeah.
That's a great one.
There you go.
You're Cinderella.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's good.
Glass slipper?
Sure.
We're going to
capture... Why make a slipper out of glass anyway, by the way? Like, what?
It's fucking romantic.
Because...
No, I feel like it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, royalty, dangerous. You know, dangerous. It's just like...
And dangerous.
Yeah.
Because it's so unique, it's special. Well, we're going to capture that Cinderella comment. Well, after this podcast, we'll give you that clip so you can put it on a dating profile. Mm-hmm. And...
Swipe left or swipe right?
It's X or a heart.
Oh, I'm...
What app is that?
Hinge.
Hinge.
Why is it called Hinge?
Because your life hinges on the success of that app.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. I don't know. Why is it called Hinge? It's a swinging door of just people you keep dating that just don't work out.
I hope not.
It's a hinge, you know. I used Hinge. It didn't work.
Nay, are you on any apps?
You covered the mic on that?
Yeah.
Well, here we go, guys. Well, welcome to... this will be episode 11 of the Campfire Conversation, and happy to be back. Yeah, it's been a few months for the crew here, and
summer
we
break.
Have our first returning guest who our listeners have not yet met due to an issue with our first recording attempt back in June, which would have been our original episode 10. So Vesna is back with us tonight, and I've been looking forward to this because after the first recording... which of course we didn't end up publishing. the story that you shared that first time was just so powerful. And I was inspired to hear it. And I think it just, and I know this sounds contrived, but truly, like, it just gave me a lens, not into just you as a person, but after our conversation a few months ago, you know, I drive past the place that you talked about over here off Colorado and Albion, and just the story of you, and your story was really powerful. So I'm excited and grateful that you've chosen to come back to the podcast tonight and share with us the story so our listeners can hear it this time. Really just grateful to be back tonight. So, I think the theme for this evening's podcast is overcoming challenge. And I think as told by the story of you, Vesna. And so I think tonight I'm going to actually turn a lot of this over to our co-host and good friend Jamel, who's going to kind of help Vesna through sharing her story for the first part of our podcast tonight. And looking forward to sharing that story with all of you here.
Welcome once again, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Yeah. Thank you for coming back. Like Josh said, we did have some technical difficulties, but it was certainly a very powerful story, a very eye-opening story. I know for me, I think Josh as well, and hopefully for the listeners. But let's just start from the beginning, shall we?
Sure.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
What is your name?
Vesna.
And where are you from?
Croatia.
Now, let's talk about that. Where is Croatia?
In Europe.
And it is a part of what? Or what did it used to be a part of?
It used to be a former Yugoslavia.
Okay. So what is the former Yugoslavia?
What is it?
Yeah.
It's a country.
Okay. What countries are...
Oh, so then it split.
Yes.
After Tito died, so it split into six different countries.
Okay.
Which is Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia, Serbia, Montenegro. How many was that?
I think you said four. Serbia, Bosnia, Herzegovina,
Croatia, Montenegro.
Montenegro.
And there's like two more. I can't think of them.
Why would this lovely country of Yugoslavia break up?
Ethnic wars and... due to ethnicities and, I mean, religions mainly.
And that's kind of part of your story, and that's why you're here today,
correct,
right?
Correct, because I came here as a refugee.
So let's talk about that. Back in the, we'll say the mid-80s, I don't want to give exactly your birthday away, but let's say the mid-80s, right, what's going on in Yugoslavia?
In mid-80s?
Yeah.
I wasn't born.
Okay.
So I don't know.
We're gonna say late 80s.
Late 80s.
I was only a few years old.
Okay.
And I believe by that time Yugoslavia has already split.
Okay.
The official split was in 1992 when all the 92 when all the countries just started claiming their independence, mm-hmm. but it already started before that.
So, we have this splitting of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people don't like each other, right?
Correct.
Why? What people don't like each other?
It was between Croats, Serbs, and Bosniaks. So
Bosniaks. I didn't know they were Bosniaks.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so that's...
You're from Bosnia, which makes you Bosnian. But if I'm talking about somebody from Bosnia, I would say that they're a Bosnian.
That's what we called them. And then, like, for example, you call me Croatian, but they were saying Croats.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Serbs, yeah. Which are Serbians.
Okay.
So it's just another name.
We're familiar with here in Denver because of...
Of Jokic, yeah.
Yeah, he's Serbian.
And then almost early loss in the Olympic Games to Serbia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Are you one of the questions that we had last time I thought that was very interesting is, where were you born?
In Croatia.
You were born in Croatia.
Correct.
But your family is Bosnian.
Correct. My parents were born in Bosnia.
Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
What?
How does that happen? Your parents were born in Bosnia.
So
you.
My parents weren't born in Yugoslavia.
Yeah. Yugoslavia, I'm sorry. So your mom would say she's Yugoslavia.
She's from former Yugoslavia. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's everything was so close to each other. I mean, it's hard. I don't know how you want me to explain it, but basically it was mainly because of the religion. So even though she was born in Bosnia, she doesn't really consider herself Bosnian, even though she's Bosnian. But it's because as soon as she said that she's Bosnian, everyone's going to think she's Muslim, mm-hmm. and she's not. So the countries have been associated with religions, and that's where all the war started, because of the religion. So, but it all used to be Yugoslavia. So she was born in Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia.
So you hear people say what you just said. You often hear former Yugoslavia.
Yeah. So a lot of people, you will hear them say, where were you born? Former Yugoslavia.
And you're all Slavic people. Correct. It's like the overarching cultural identity originally.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is also the basis or the origin of your language, right? The
Slavic,
Slavic language. Even though there's differences between say speaking Serbian and speaking Croatian.
Not really. There's no the language is the same. It's the way we so it's like accents. Like when you go to Texas, you have one is a dialect.
Mm-hmm. Dialect, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it's same like that. All the words are the same. We all understand each other. It's just the way we speak it.
Gotcha.
So we've set this context here. So we're in the early 90s. These wars of separation are beginning. You are about five or six mm-hmm. when this major life event happens for you. Can you tell us again, but our listeners, what happens at the onset of this war that ultimately leads you to become a refugee? So set the stage for us. Where are you at this time? Where are you living?
Yes.
And then you shared this really powerful story before about your brother coming back to your house.
My mom's brother.
Your mom's brother, your mm-hmm. uncle.
Yeah.
Could you tell us
so
more
it was
about that?
1993, I believe. We were in Bosnia at that time. My dad's parents, we lived with them, so we all lived together. It was my family and my dad's parents. It was normal for everybody to live together. It was an evening of 1993. I don't know the date, but it's mm-hmm. when my mom's brother came to our house. He's her younger brother. I think there's a 14-year difference, and he was in the military.
Okay.
And he told my parents, as I'm sitting there just watching, not understanding what's going on, it's time for you guys to pack up and leave. You need to go.
And you're 5 or 6?
I was 6.
6.
6, between 6 and 7.
So for first grader, basically.
I didn't start school in American
yeah. schools. Yeah.
Yeah, but we could not start school. However, before that happened, there was a lot going on. The war has already started. It was already where people were being taken away. Mainly it was Muslims in that town that were being targeted. And so the war has already started at that point, but it's when my mom's brother came to our house and told us we got to leave. It's no longer safe to be there.
I think an interesting part of the story for me is that when I think for Americans now, when you hear Muslim, you think of somebody who is darker, olive skinned or brown skinned from the Middle East. And you have this image in your head, especially after 9/11 here. Right. But like. For your story, everybody pretty much looks the same. You can't really tell the difference if visually looking to see if somebody is Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, whatever, right? Everybody just looks the same.
Correct. We all look the same. The only way you can tell the difference is by our names.
Your names. I remember you shared that.
It's the names, how they would ask you for your name, and depending on what your name is, it's how... whatever they were doing, it would happen to you. This is where I shared the story with my mom hiding her friends' kids, naming them our names, and telling them, if anyone says, what is your name? This is your name.
Because your name is Christian.
It's Catholic.
Catholic.
Yeah. It's a Croatian Catholic name.
So this is essentially a civil war.
Correct.
Right? It's a civil war. It would be equivalent in some ways to an American civil war of like, you have artificial borders, you have states, And I don't know what a Nebraskan looks like other than the fact they're probably wearing a red shirt that says Huskers on it.
And eating corn.
And eating, and maybe eating corn. So, you know, there's no distinguishing ability other than these proxies, these kind of approximations of, well, that name sounds Muslim. Even mm-hmm. though I'm sure sometimes it's a Muslim name and you don't even identify as Muslim, similarly to Catholic. So, and when you said the war had already started, if I recall, you shared stories of either recollections that you had or things that you actually saw of people just sitting on the streets. Mm-hmm. What was going on?
So they were pulling, at that time, was it the Muslims? The Serbs were the ones that came into the town and started pulling all the Muslims out of their homes and lining them up on the streets. So this is all a very small city. The streets are very small. Everyone's close to each other. Everything's really small.
Yeah.
So our house was, the apartment wasn't even a house. It was on the main street. Mm-hmm. It was on the second level. So through the window is where I would see them pulling families out, lining them up, sending them on the ground. Just, I don't know what the reason was for. I just know it was cold. They were sitting there, not knowing what's going to happen to them. I know my mom was taking food out to them, water. She was feeding them. And I do recall seeing that from the window. There was also shots being fired. There was just a lot going on at that time.
Jesus. Did, like, with what you were seeing, I mean, they were just sitting on the street? Were they getting put in buses? Like,
they were just sitting there waiting, not just like me, not knowing what's going to happen to them.
So in that same house is when your uncle comes.
It's when he comes.
And then he says, you need to leave.
Yes.
On the basis of what? Like, why was he saying that?
It's not safe. You need to get out of here.
So what did you do?
And that was because of your dad, right? They thought your dad was Muslim. Mm.
No, they never thought my dad was Muslim. It's just, I honestly don't know why. It was basically, you need to leave, you need to get out, pack whatever you can carry and leave. With my dad is we were hiding him because they were taking men and boys over 16
right.
and putting them. And my dad was not, he was never going to kill a fly on the wall. Mm-hmm. And he always had long hair. Is at that time, because we basically, when it said leave, pack up, we packed up. I packed up my dad's underwear. Don't know why.
It's an important thing to have.
It is. And I'm sure my mom tells that story to this day, even after he passed. But we started walking. And we walked miles and miles and miles, and we basically walked through woods, through forests, and that's when we started hiding my dad as a woman from his hair, so they would not take him. And it's when we kept walking and walking and walking. I think we walked for 2 days, and it's when one of my dad's friends that was also in the military, but he was part of, I believe he was part of the Serbian military, but they were friends, told him, picked us up, brought us to his house, and told us to stay there until it's time to go from there. And then we ended up in Serbia.
So there's so much to unpack even in that.
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Yeah, go for
it. So you're in Bosnia, and you walked to Serbia.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't believe we walked all the way to Serbia. We walked for 2 days through the forests, and then we
and
got
picked up
in a truck and taken to this guy's house.
So added my own curiosity, how far is that, right? Is that 20 miles? Is that 100 miles? Like, do you have any ballpark, any reference of, like, how far you traveled, including walking? I mean, walking for 2 days.
I honestly wouldn't
you
be
walk
able
in 2 days?
To tell you.
Yeah, a lot, you can walk far.
It's
yeah.
a lot of walking. That's why there was nothing that we cared. We literally left hoping that we were eventually going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't carry.
Hey, what did you have with you?
I don't believe I had anything except
underwear.
My dad's underwear.
Your dad's underwear.
And then whatever my mom packed.
Yeah.
I don't remember a backpack. I don't remember.
Just walking
through forests in the middle of the night. And it was a group of people, so we were not by ourselves. We were walking in groups.
I'm going to jump in again real quick. To me, a thing that's like, it's crazy for me to even try to have a frame of reference of is, 6 years old, 7 years old, thinking about a first grader, which my oldest son is a first grader now, right? And thinking, I got to leave the house, And I don't know if I'm ever going to see that house again, which, in fact, you never did see that house ever again.
No, not until 2012.
Wow.
When so I went back.
10 years almost later.
20.
20 years 20. Later.
Almost 20 years, 20 later. Years, 20 years later.
Wow. We're going to get to that, but that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother thing, right? Okay, yeah. So you're walking from Bosnia, and you have no idea where you're walking. You're just walking. You get picked up. You go to a house. They say, hey, your dad needs to be hidden or pretend to be a girl.
I mean, we're already hiding him. Yeah.
Was that his idea?
My mom.
Did your dad have any fun with it? Like, do you remember any humor
in that? I don't remember
that?
Any humor. I just know that he was scared. That
I
he
bet.
Would. My mom knew if my dad was taken, he would not come back.
Yeah.
So then you get to Serbia.
Mm-hmm. So Serbia is when we went to the guy's house that lives in Serbia, and then all of a sudden it was no longer safe there. Everything was just blowing up, and that's when we got picked up again in another truck and taken to some tents in Serbia.
Okay,
a refugee camp.
Like a refugee camp, but it was literally a camp, like you lived in a tent.
So literally... things are blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying like literally or just like figuratively? Or are you actually seeing like shit on fire?
Yeah, shit on fire.
Yes, you
could
say
the word.
You could say shit.
Yes, like
now we have to make
gunshots.
This podcast explicit. Unfortunately, the children can't listen.
Oh,
thanks, Vesna.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, kids.
But yeah.
No, stuff's blowing
so
up.
You're literally, and people talk to this all the time, but like you're literally in a war zone.
Correct.
There is... shit blowing up,
mm-hmm.
bullets are flying.
Mm-hmm. Airplanes? Like, is this like bombs being dropped sort of
bombs
stuff?
Bombs were being dropped, yeah.
Do you ever hear airplanes and have any like, because we live over, you live in the same area, so you hear these planes taking off from Buckley. Do you ever hear like our military jets flying and have any flashbacks almost? Because they're a distinctively different sound.
I used to in the beginning, but not so much anymore. To this day, I still get gunshots are the big ones for me.
I bet.
But I'm kind of getting over that or learning to because it's more normal.
Which
I mean,
is
it
crazy.
Wasn't normal, but it used
Why
to be very bad.
Why is it even normal here? That's a whole different podcast. But anyway, so now you're in Serbia, still in Serbia,
yes.
But you're in a camp.
Correct.
But this is not a United Nations official camp or anything yet.
No, it was just a bunch, maybe about 100 tents, military tents.
And how long were you there?
3 months from in November, December, and January in the middle of the winter in a tent.
In a tent.
And correct.
So a winter in Serbia. Describe that for our listeners.
Sounds cold.
I assume
freezing.
It's not like Florida.
No, it was freezing. But there was a lot of kids, so it was fun at the same time for me. Every family had their own tents. We had a little heating stove type of thing where you put wood and warms up the tent. There was a bigger tent that would serve food.
Okay.
They had the best cookies. I don't know if I said this last time.
You did.
There were these military cookies that had an expiration date of like 30 plus years.
Wow.
So that tells you what was in them. But they were like the best cookies. To this day, if I can find these military cookies, if anyone out there knows what I'm talking about, I will pay to eat one.
Yes.
Yeah,
we're gonna put that
in
our
Instagram
post.
But basically, people would just serve us food. We would eat. There was not much to do. We would shower with cans. We would heat up water in a can of sardines or ham or whatever we were.
A can,
basically.
Like the size of like
a tin can.
Yeah.
You put hot water in
can.
It and you'd pour it
you
on
put
you.
Water and then you heat it up and then you pour it. Someone has to pour it over you. I mean, my mom was pouring it over me outside of the tent and then you go back in.
Oh.
So, 94 at this point.
And we poop in the woods.
Yeah. That I mean, side note, that happens out in Colorado, but for reasons of choice versus necessity.
Josh does it all the time. This is how campfire conversations actually got started because Josh was pooping in the woods. So this is 1994 at this point, right? You said
it was still 1993. This all happened really quickly.
That's what I'm saying. So,
oh, yeah, the 90.
So like November, December.
And then January 94.
January 94. And then you guys moved to another camp?
So from the camp in Serbia, they were taking people. So basically, if you had money, a lot of people that were with were Bosnian, they were Croatian but living in Bosnia, or they were Catholics or originally Croatian. So it was a lot of, it's a long story. We would be here 2 days. But that's, and if you had money, if you had to someone to pay for you, or because some people had family in Germany, basically, and if you were to be able to pay someone, they will get you to Germany, they will take you somewhere, they will, so people started leaving. We were one of the last families there because my parents had no money. We were really, really, really poor. So there was a guy that was taking these poor families and was paying for them to be transported. And we were then, at that time, we were transported to a refugee camp in Croatia.
Okay.
In a truck with, what are those trucks with those little things?
Looks like a covered wagon almost.
Yeah, like covered with the...
Yeah, like a tarp almost, yeah, over the back. It's like...
So it's like all the families that were left, there was a guy that was... Because they said, we're not letting you go until you pay us. You're not leaving this camp until you pay us. And we couldn't pay, so there was a few families, and we were one of those. And then this guy, if my mom was here, she would know all this, but he paid for all of us that were left, and they took us to another refugee camp because Serbia no longer wanted to keep us there.
So I'm actually looking at a map right now, and
you're not on Hinge.
I'm not on Hinge, but I'm looking at the map. Croatia is on one side, Bosnia-Herzegovina is in the middle, and then Serbia is on the other side of Bosnia-Herzegovina. So you're walking from Croatia into...
No, from Bosnia to Serbia, towards Serbia.
Yep. And then you go.
And from Serbia, we were transported by a truck into a refugee camp in Varaždin, Croatia, which is like straight up.
And is this a mountainous area? Or is it like, what's the topography like in the areas that you're in?
It's hills.
Okay.
It's not Rocky Mountains.
Not Rocky Mountains. So you're then moved into this refugee camp in Bosnia?
Croatia.
Croatia. Okay. And this is the refugee camp that you spent a number of years at.
5 years. Correct.
And so just again, so I'm getting the story correct. You're born in Croatia.
Correct.
You moved
and
to
Bosnia. And then I moved to Bosnia.
You get moved to Serbia.
That's not really a move. I had no choice.
That's what I'm saying. You go to Serbia to go
back. I didn't have a permanent address
right.
in Serbia.
And then to go back to Croatia.
Correct.
Because you're getting theoretically chased around by this war.
Correct.
So, again, not by any choice, but you're moving across three different countries.
To end up back in the country in which you were born,
exactly,
as a almost in a refugee camp in your own country.
Correct.
That's wild.
Yeah. What, like, I mean, I know we're going through the timeline, but as you think back to, and even as you recall and recollect this story, which I know is hard to share, and I appreciate you sharing it.
Definitely.
What like, overarching feelings or memories kind of flood back as you think about even that stretch? I mean, really, at this point, we're talking about, what, 6 months? Essentially, 6 months of being in your original home, moving mm-hmm. into this short-term refugee camp, and then being transported over to this long-term refugee camp. What's going through your mind as a seven-year-old?
I didn't understand what was going on. I just kept going. Kept asking my mom questions and what was going on, and she was explaining everything to me. But at the same time, I was happy because I was surrounded by kids. There were so many of us, and there was always kids around, so I was never bored.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know.
I'm thinking of parallels to current situations, and the thing that keeps popping up in my head is the situation in Gaza right now,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm.
Where there are families in northern Gaza, and they're told to move south, told and forced to move south, and they move to south where they think it's safe, and here are bombs, here are gunfire, just like kind of what you're imagining. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the kids who don't know what's going on, but similar to your story, I'm sure they're not having a great time, but they don't know what's going on. They're just happy to be around other kids, not really realizing what the hell is really going on in the world right
Correct.
Now. And I don't know, I'm just drawing the parallel, I think, from what I can see and what I can hear, trying to relate to a current day struggle, right?
I mean, so many of them. Yeah, I appreciate that parallel. Not, I mean, I think the overall piece is like, and this sounds like I'm going to acknowledge the fact that I can only make this statement from a position of having heard about it, but war sucks.
It does.
It really sucks. Gaza,
horrible.
Serbia, Ukraine, the history of, you know, the world is filled with it. So
we're back in Croatia.
Yeah.
Not where you were born, I assume, someplace further away.
Correct.
And you get to a refugee camp.
Correct.
And you spend 5 years in this refugee camp. So from 7 years old to 11, 12 years
12.
Old.
11, almost 12. I came here on my 12th birthday.
So what is the Croatian refugee camp look and feel like?
Right now, it is, for you to get an idea right now, it's student housing.
But then, back then.
So it looks exactly the same right now, and it's where a student lives. It's
a
dorm.
Okay.
So it was intense.
It was intense. It was three buildings, green, yellow, white. So three buildings, we were in the white building. They were kind of separated by yellow building was Muslims, white buildings were Catholics, and green buildings were refugees directly from Croatia.
So the two groups of people that essentially started the conflict, who started it, but like you have Catholics and Muslims living in the same refugee camp.
Mm-hmm.
Victims of the same war.
Victims of the same war, perpetrators arguably of the same war, not the literal people in the camp, but like, you know, extensions of each group, so to speak. Was there communication? Was there like any sort of...
Did you play with Muslim kids?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. We were all getting along. There was no hate. There was nothing.
Isn't that crazy?
It was, everybody was getting
so
along.
Fucking crazy that...
Adults were getting along.
Yeah, right. And who isn't? People in power, people who want to...
People in the military.
People in the military, and the people in power, the government, is the one.
Yeah.
They're not really extensions of those groups. They don't, like, the factions
represent.
That are warring
yeah.
are not
Extensions is the wrong word, yeah. just, like, related in name only, yeah. is what I mean by that. And that's, I mean, that statement by itself is powerful, right, is that you literally have two groups living in the same refugee camp who... To an outside view, would say, well, you have Muslims and Catholics who are warring against each other. And had they gone to this refugee camp, they would see adults and kids playing and communicating mm-hmm. with each other. And that, I think, in a nutshell, is probably a great synopsis of the world, is there's a percentage of people who create the problems, the troubles, the hardships, the destruction, the horrors, the hate, and then say that, you know, they're part of this overall group. And within that group, within that identity, within that larger association, the vast majority of people within it probably have very little desire to play the game that those in charge are playing. And I think that's just a really powerful visual that you're literally in the same place.
And to your point, Vesna, because I keep saying
you can call me Vez.
I'm not going to because I know you don't like it. But to your point of like, you guys are all chilling.
Yeah.
You're having not a good time, but you're making it work.
We're making it work.
Nobody's really fighting. I'm sure there was disagreements or whatnot, but like nobody's out here trying to kill each other. You're just living and existing while the powers that be at the time are warring with each other, fighting with each other. Making life difficult for the people who are actually in these camps.
Gosh.
So then you're in this camp. You're in the white building for 5 years.
5 years.
And you're watching Teen Wolf. Not Teen Wolf. What
Teen
was it?
Teen Wolf?
The Beverly Hills.
90210.
90210. And your mom comes to you and says, pack your shit. We're going to America.
We're going to America.
And you are how old at this point?
Almost 12.
and you don't know a lick of English.
None.
You don't even, you are watching 90210, and is it translated?
It
or?
Is. Everything's translated.
Okay. Wait, everything verbally, translated. Or do they have closed captions?
It's some shows are verbally, you can tell they don't verbally translate it, so yeah. You're listening it to it.
But the, like or, the mouths don't match.
They talk
yeah, the mouths
over
don't
it.
Match.
Okay.
Yeah, everything, I mean, I used to spell the word high, H-Y, for like,
I still do.
A year when I came to, like, I, no, zero English, none
wow,
whatsoever.
Okay.
But your mom comes to you and says, we're going to, mm-hmm. She, does she say America or United States?
America.
You're going to America, and your first thought is?
Okay. I mean, I didn't want to leave.
Uh-huh.
Because I liked it there. I made friends. I went to school. I wanted to stay there. I wanted to live there. But people, again, were started to leave. So the camp was getting smaller and smaller and smaller as people were going to different, to Canada, to Australia. And I was sad to leave.
I'm sorry, real quick. You were saying that at the first camp in Serbia, if you had money, people would transport you and people had family
in Germany
and
where
places
they would
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys have family anywhere outside of the former Yugoslavia?
Nope.
Yugoslavia?
No.
So you have no connection to anything outside of... No connection, no money to anything outside of the former Yugoslavia.
Correct.
And your mom comes to you after Lord knows what process she had to go through.
Correct.
Right? And says to you, we're going to America. You say, okay, how long between we're going to America till you actually get on a plane to go to America?
A week.
And you're in school? Like
I was in school. I was in third grade, how old?
Yeah, well, you're probably in fifth or sixth.
No, because I skipped a grade when I came here, and I went straight to sixth. So I skipped fifth. So then I was in fourth.
Fourth grade.
I skipped fifth, went to sixth. We were only allowed to bring one bag each on the plane, and we packed up and went to Italy, from Italy to New York.
When you pictured America, when your mom said that, what was your initial image of it?
90210.
So Mercedes-Benzes, BMWs.
Big houses,
pretty,
ocean.
Pretty women, handsome men.
The first place you touched down is New York.
New York City.
It's stinky, and it's dirty.
Yep.
People are living in 200 square foot apartments.
And we had to spend the night in New York because apparently Denver had
a blizzard.
Okay,
and
wait,
is March of 97?
March 17th of 1998.
98.
Okay, so before we get there.
St. Patty's Day.
Or 18th.
You're at the crib watching 90210 or what have you. Mom walks through the door, pack your shit, we're going to America. Your whole life for the past 5 years has been in this white building.
Correct. In this one room of a white building.
This one room of a white building.
All we had was one room.
In
a studio. It was your dorm, like bathrooms in the hallways.
It was just a room. We shared a kitchen. We shared a bathroom.
You've been to college.
Yeah, there was no kitchen. So
yeah,
you just
so
had
no
a fir-
kitchen.
Yeah.
So it was a community kitchen. Or the way we got food at the refugee camp is there was a building that would serve food. So you had lunch, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You get your bucket and they pour it in your bucket.
I'm sorry, a bucket?
A bucket. Because if it was soup, you're going to take your bucket. And they're going to give you four
like
scoops.
With a ladle. Or not a ladle.
Like
a
cup. A
bucket with like a handle.
Yeah. Like whatever.
Like,
like for our listeners.
Like a mop bucket.
What would the size of this bucket be?
Like big ice cream buckets. You know those ice cream round buckets?
Yeah.
Like a gallon.
Like a gallon bucket.
A gallon bucket.
And then you get four scoops. One scoop for each family member.
Wow. All for every meal?
For every meal. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you missed it, you missed it. You suck. I mean, you're going to...
You couldn't. There was no. Was there a grocery store?
There was, yeah.
Okay.
And my parents worked.
Like
you know, they worked in cleaning houses.
Okay.
To make extra money, where we would go to the farmer's market and get fresh fruits and veggies and stuff like that.
And your school was not within the building itself.
No, it was a separate.
School.
Yeah, I walked
okay.
to school.
So again, 5 years in a building.
You're leaving this place.
Everything that you have, everything you love and hold dear to yourself, is within. A square mile, less than that?
The camp?
Yeah, the camp.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know my distance.
Sure. How many acres was it?
The size of a football field.
Sure. Yeah.
Probably bigger than the size of a football.
No, not really, because it was literally one building here, one building here, one building here.
So for 5 years.
And then a basketball court in the middle.
Nice. International sports. For 5 years, after being on the road for 6 months, moving constantly for 6 months, 5 years you spend in a football field with everybody, everything you needed right then and there, and then your mom says, pack your shit, in 7 days we're going to America, which you have no clue, you have no family, you have no money, we're just going to America.
Mm-hmm. You're not speaking English yet?
Nope.
So you get on a plane, your first time on a plane, I'm
assuming. First time on a plane.
So you could get 30,000 feet up in the air and fly from Croatia to Italy.
To Milan, Italy.
And you don't get off the plane, I'm assuming.
Well, no, we get off the plane, we switch planes, and then on a plane to New York.
Deplaned. Yeah.
You get to New York, and I remember this story. You get to New York, and everybody else gets called.
Correct.
And they call you last.
We were the only family left, because other people that were part of this program and got to come to America had family in St. Louis, Chicago, all these other bigger cities. And if you knew someone that lived there, you can tell them and they'll send you there. And we didn't know anyone.
They sent you to the Mile High City.
Denver, Colorado. They tried to,
but then it was like,
there's a blizzard.
They tried to. And then they're like, well, everybody's leaving, but you're going to stay and we're going to send you to this motel with mice and roaches. And we'll pick you up in the morning.
But you thought that motel was awesome.
Not that motel.
No, the one that you got here when you guys.
But
got here.
Oh, when we came here and got the
apartment.
But
you're still in New York
at
a roach-infested motel, mm-hmm. waiting to come to Denver. So you hop on another plane. Are you trying to, like, you're a preteen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picturing me as a preteen. I'm trying to fit in. Like, if I go to a new place, I'm trying to picture what it is that this new place is like. Were you trying to already?
You
do anything
no
American-ish?
Clue.
Were you trying to like take a 90210 sort of thing and like, oh, I need some sunglasses like
nope,
that?
Nope, I came here not. It looked different. People were not 90210 people.
So you're just being you, and you're in Denver, Colorado, and who picks you up?
Our sponsor.
And who is this?
A lady that was assigned by the government or the city,
okay.
or someone that's going to help my parents get a job, help us apply for Medicare, food stamps, and all that. She picks us up, takes us to a house of this two judge. One, the wife was the judge. I don't know what the husband did in Broomfield.
Okay.
We stayed with them for a night, and then we got into our apartment on Florida in Abilene.
So Broomfield, for listeners, is like a little north of Denver. It's kind of a decent suburb, and then you're there for a couple days?
I think just a night.
Mm-hmm. And then they place you in this apartment,
mm-hmm.
which, again, for I'm pointing to things, but, you know, it's like 6 blocks away from where we're sitting right now. So basically just outside of central Denver and outside of Glendale. And tell us about this place. I remember how you initially...
It was empty. I mean, we got in, it was empty. There was mice running around. And then it had some roaches in the kitchen. But it had a bathroom. It had a toilet and a tub and running water. It was great.
Yeah.
So you get to the apartment and you turn on the water and you're just like...
Wow.
Wow.
Like... water.
Yeah.
What do you have at this point? So you
nothing. I have a bag.
You have a bag.
Mm-hmm.
You have your dad's underwear in it too, or no?
I don't think I packed.
No,
this
at this
time.
Point you
no,
didn't pack
this,
that.
At this time he had to pack
he
his
got
own.
His own. So and this is how many people in your family?
Four.
Okay. So the four of you are in this apartment. You have a bag each.
Mm-hmm. One bag allowed.
Remind me, was there some initial like funding given to you to allow you to kind of get off the ground a little bit?
So
how did that work?
To furnish the apartment, our sponsor took my dad within the first week to this donation center where he was allowed to pick a couch,
okay.
utensils, dishes, stuff like that we would need for the apartment to furnish it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all donated by people that he was allowed to pick up.
This is a one-bedroom apartment, a two-bedroom apartment?
Two.
Bedrooms.
Oh,
so
we had two.
So
yeah.
So you and your brother had a room.
Well, I didn't share with my brother. I shared with my mom.
Okay.
And then my dad and my brother slept together.
Okay.
But you still had now your own space.
Yeah.
After, as opposed
in
to
bed.
Being, yeah. As opposed to being.
I didn't sleep
being,
on the couch anymore.
As opposed to being in a studio for
right.
5 years.
That had no beds. Like, had two bunk beds and a couch. And
so you're just living life.
I mean, it was amazing. But we got to furnish it with, like, mismatching furniture. It was great. And they helped us by putting us on Medicare for the first
okay.
6 months and food stamps. And that's how, and then they found my mom and dad jobs.
Who is the they in this?
So I believe it's the city, the state
okay.
that had all this funded or organized
okay.
these sponsors. There used to be refugee like offices around the city back in the day. I don't know. I don't think they exist anymore.
It's some kind of government agency that,
yeah.
that helps you get on your feet.
Correct. Okay.
And I think a story that we talked about last time, I thought it was very important to share is you're helped out.
Mm-hmm.
You're given this, and I hate to even say the word given, but you're given this funding up front,
mm-hmm.
but you're expected to pay it back.
Correct. So I wasn't expected to pay back food stamps and Medicare and all that for the first 6 months, but after 6 months, it was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
We were expected to pay back the flights
mm.
to United States. So we had to pay those back in mm. a monthly payment, and my parents were required to have jobs right away. So the only jobs was non-English-speaking jobs, which my mom started in housekeeping, and my dad was a machine operator. He didn't need to speak. So they were required to have jobs, and because everything's going to be cut off on month six,
yeah.
and then we had to pay back the flights.
And I think the
and
reason
we
I
pay our own rent and all that, so that's why they're like, okay, we're helping you, but you need to have a job. And
I think it's important to point that out because I think there's another misconception with Americans in today who think, you know, these refugees, these migrants, these immigrants come here and my tax dollars are going to pay for them to get steak and lobster and you know, just get everything given to them and all these handouts when it's in reality,
yeah.
it's like, hey, we're trying to make sure these people are okay for at least 6 months and then that they're able to be self-sufficient. But at the same time, they're paying back what was given to them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to just as a quick aside building on that. Jon Stewart was doing an older clip, but him reviewing Fox News's like covering refugees and people in poverty and like all of these just twisted, jaded views of people who are just trying to leech off everyone else. And none of those people could even walk the first day of your journey back in Bosnia anywhere else, let alone go through 6 years of all of this. And so it's just such bullshit that people can sit around making assumptions about what it takes to, you know, move out of the incredibly challenging circumstances you were in. So that actually is a good, like, second moment is kind of this theme here around like overcoming challenges. Now you're a little bit older, so you're like 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably starting to make a little more sense of your worldview at this time. You're going through a lot of stuff, but what is kind of, maybe you have an answer to it, what is kind of your pervasive mindset at this time as you think about what you're doing and how you're moving through this challenge? Like, did you start carving out a personal identity of like, you know, throw anything at me, I can do it? Or like, what
are
was
you just, you're just moving day to day? You said, hey.
It was basically a day to day. It was hard.
Yeah.
I was made, you know, I was put in school right away, so I had to go to school, no English, learning English in school.
Like
I was
a newcomers program, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, English ESL classes.
Mm-hmm.
Merrill Middle School is where I started, and they
Shout
had
out
a great
Merrill.
They had a great program, and that's where all the refugees kids
mm-hmm.
in middle school pretty
yeah,
much
still
started.
To this day.
But it was hard. I was made fun of. I wore the same outfit once, like, all week long, so kids were making fun of me. I didn't speak the language. I walked around with a dictionary. When someone would talk to me, I had to have them wait so I can find a word to tell them. So I wasn't, it took me maybe till I got to high school to build an identity.
Because
I was just day by day trying to, you know, just make it through. And while I'm being made fun of, and I don't want to say bullied because no one really bullied me, but I only had my refugee group of friends, and then my parents were struggling, no English, no nothing, so they were relying on me and my brother to help them because we were learning English faster than they were. So there wasn't really, until I got to high school, I was just going day by day.
What kept you going?
My family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that I was safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about, shootings and
what
bombs.
What was that thought process? Like you're going from walking, being transported for 6 months in a war zone. Things are blowing up. There's gunfire all around you. You're relatively safe for 5 years, and you get on a plane, and you're like, am I going back to a war zone? Or you knew that you guys were going to be safe at least?
I knew I was going to be safe. I don't know what it was, but I knew like that I was going to be safe here, that there's going to be opportunities here. And I don't know if it's because that's what I was always told, but I wasn't worried about getting killed or any of that. Like I was.
And your family kept you going. Maybe I'm making an inference, but you said that you and your brother were picking up on the language mm-hmm. faster than your parents were. It sounds like you carried a real high degree of responsibility for your parents as well as for yourself. Did you acknowledge it at the time that you felt like you were carrying some of that extra load? I mean, the term would be almost like being parentified as a child, right? Like you're almost...
Did you feel like you had a responsibility to help
yes.
your parents?
Like keep your parents safe and make sure that they were fitting...
Not necessarily keep them safe, but help them get through because they didn't know how to do anything. Like it took them forever to figure out the bus situation.
Mm.
They didn't understand the language. They didn't know how to fill out any paperwork. They didn't know anything. So... I felt like it was me and my brother, because we spoke the language.
Yeah.
We had to go with them everywhere. I mean, it was, there was no more back, you know, in Croatia, it was kids and having fun and hanging out. Now it was like,
now you're an adult.
Now you're an adult at 12 years old, following your parents to doctors, everything, helping them. Translate.
Yeah.
Another story that you told that I really love is talk to me about going to Safeway? That was right across the street or
yep,
not too
far. Yep, it was across
the street.
It's still
yeah,
there.
The Safeway's still there. Oh yeah.
Where we would.
And so you're pushing your buggy across the street and then what was it like going to Safeway for the first time?
I can sense people staring because literally we walked to Safeway across Colorado Boulevard, which is a huge street.
Mm-hmm.
We bought everything we could with our little food stamps card. And then we pushed this buggy full of food across Colorado Boulevard. And, you know, people are staring. But it was like the fact that we were able to buy a gallon of chocolate milk, like all this chocolate milk. And it was great. I mean, I honestly felt like, wow, like, I would have never been able to do this back home or somewhere else. It was amazing.
So then you're at Merrill.
But you'll not see me doing that now.
You don't drink chocolate milk now?
I do drink. I'm not going to be pushing buggies across Colorado Boulevard.
I hate chocolate milk. So
I love chocolate milk.
So, it is delicious.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Safeway brand.
You're at Merrill Middle School, and then you make your way to South High School.
Correct.
What was South High School like for you?
Better. It's when I started making more friends. I was still technically hanging out mainly like with people from other countries, with similar situations.
You had a community in other refugees.
Yes.
Why was that?
We were just able to connect. We had something in common.
And it didn't matter where you were from?
No.
What refugee, where you came from?
It didn't matter.
It was you guys against the world.
Correct. So, we had that in common.
So you get to South and life is a little bit better as far as bullying or being picked on or what have you.
Correct.
And this is when? When did you start high school?
2000.
In the year 2000.
Right?
So in the year 2000, you go to your...
Y2K.
Y2K. You go through your freshman year of high school. Are you still carrying around your dictionary?
No.
So you don't have to do
my
that
English,
anymore.
My English was excellent.
Perfect.
Just kidding. No, no more dictionary in my hands. I still have that dictionary. I'm going to bring it to you
one day. What color is it?
Yellow.
I love
a yellow dictionary.
With blue writing, like the blue writing. It's a
tiny Can you send
one.
Us a picture of that? I'm going to put that. Would you mind if we put that in like a post?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I'll send you a picture of my dictionary.
Yes, I would love to see that.
And one of the stories that we told last time that really blew my mind. Freshman year, you make it through freshman year of high school. For anybody who's ever been to high school, freshman year is crazy as shit as it is already, right? But then sophomore year comes, September 11th, 2001 happens. What are you thinking?
Not again.
Talk to us about that. I like to ask people this question all the time. Where were you September 11th, 2001? What do you remember? What do you remember that day? You woke up that morning and what?
I walked to school, and it's when they started pulling out the TVs in the classrooms, and it just, I mean, it was, I don't know. I don't even know. It was unbelievable. I didn't know what was going on. I was trying to understand what was going on. I was scared. I thought it was happening again.
I think that's like you said, we talked about this story last time, and that's one of the things that stuck with me is you're in your house in Croatia. Your uncle comes and says, hey, pack your shit. You got to go. You pack your shit. You go. You walk for 2 days. You get on a truck. You get moved to a house. You're at the house. You get moved to another house. You go to Serbia. You're at a camp there. Pack your shit. You got to go. You leave from Serbia. You drive clear across all the way back to Croatia. You get in a house. You get in the white buildings. You're in the white buildings for 5 years. And then your mom says, pack your shit. You got to go because of war. Mm-hmm. Right. Things are blowing up. Things are going crazy. This war is still going on. Not still going on. This war is going on in the former Yugoslavia. You touch down in Denver, Colorado in the middle of a blizzard. And you're like, finally, we're good. We're safe. You make it to high school.
Mm-hmm.
You get through your freshman year of high school, and then all of a sudden, oh, shit, it's happening again.
Yeah. It was a different – I knew we had more time because I understood how big America was. Mm. And that's – at the same time, my parents were like, don't worry. This is far. New York is very far. It's not going to come here. But it just starts – all the flashback, mm-hmm. everything that started happening, you know, all the troops, like there was – It felt like war again. It was scary.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It was just weird.
You felt safer.
I felt safer because of the fact that everyone's like, New York is so far.
Yep.
But
right,
I didn't.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't matter how something far, how, like, why is this happening again?
Yep.
Right. So, I mean, I think your story is fascinating and powerful, and we also could keep talking for so much longer.
We could be here for like 6 hours.
I want to ask this, and this is maybe an unfair question, but I want to be careful with how I with how I preface it. One, I don't want to make assumptions that you identify as a refugee. If you do, please affirm that or don't. But I'm curious at what stage you really felt like you moved out of that transitional phase of I'm still trying to find my way here. Like, at what point do you think, to be clear, your story never ends. It never ends. But at what point do you think your story of just so much conflict and transition and movement and being unsettled, do you identify a certain stage in your life where you say, you know what, it was around now, it was around this point when I felt like I finally can call this new place either home, part two, or I'm settled in, or has that even happened?
It has. I will always consider myself a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
I will not say I came here willingly. I mean, I came here how I came here. I'm always going to be a refugee. There's no doubt about that. But I think after I realized that I lived here longer than I lived anywhere else, mm-hmm. where I'm like, okay, this is my home now. And then when I became a citizen in 2012, I'm like, now I'm an American. And then it's literally after college and maybe even more recent, I mean, that I'm like, this is my home now.
Yeah.
Part two. I mean, I still...
Part two. Home is always home.
Home is always home. Always home. But like when I'm home, when I went back to Croatia and Bosnia in 2019, I was coming back home when I came to America. So it's like...
It's
I have two homes.
Yeah.
Real quick, I know we're getting towards the end of the show here. So one question.
Why can't we make it like long, like 6 hours?
One question I did want to ask is the process it took to become an American.
We don't want to talk about that.
What did that look like? What did it feel like? And also navigating that with your mom, right?
Yes. So it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It took a lot of... I had to learn a lot of studying, and then I had to pass a test. And the test, my mom, who still has broken English and doesn't speak as good English as I do, did better than I did on this test, which is embarrassing. But it took us, I mean, we had decks, 50-page decks studying. I was working at the Westin Hotel at that time, at the front desk, studying for my citizenship test.
Do you consider yourself American?
I do.
And it was that after you became an American citizen?
Yes.
Or did it take some time after you became an American citizen?
Well, after I became American citizen, it's like, I'm an American. Mm-hmm. I'm a American Croatian.
What does that mean to you? I think it's different from people who are naturalized in the middle of life versus people who are born into a certain status. What does it mean for you to say that you're an American?
That's crazy. I don't know if I have a... I don't know.
How do you feel about saying that you are, I guess?
I feel like I have the opportunities here that I would never have back home. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I can be anything that I want to be.
Are you a Croatian American or are you an American?
I'm a Croatian American.
I think it's a very important distinction because I tell people all the time, I'm black and then I'm American. But I think it is well documented or well known that there are black Americans. But first and foremost, I'm black before I'm anything else. I'm black before I'm a male. I am black before I'm anything, right? And then, yes, I'm an American. And I'll fight to the death of it over some American shit, right? But before I fight over some American shit, I'm black before I'm anything else. Do you do the same?
Yes. I'm Croatian, and I am who I am because of where I came from.
Exactly.
And that's why I'm always going to be Croatian first and then American.
I think that's an important distinction.
That is, yeah.
And an important conversation driver. I know, we're getting to the end of it.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to talk about, and to Josh's point, his... not challenge, but theme or topic for tonight was challenges, right? And we talked about a lot of the challenges that you and your family faced from damn near birth all the way up until 2012. And I'm sure you've faced other challenges since then. But of all the challenges that you have faced in your life, the road that you traveled to get here, what do you think is one of the biggest or is the biggest challenges that you have faced in your life?
The war.
Tell me more.
I mean, just from surviving the war, doing everything that I've done up to age 7, and then living in a refugee camp in Croatia till I was 11. I mean, the first 11 years of my life is made me who I am today.
Yeah. Vesna, when it comes to that challenge, and I think thematically this idea of overcoming it, what advice or what advice feels, I don't want to, you know, say it's pandering, but like either what advice or what reflections do you have on what you learned from overcoming this challenge? Like, what would you say to somebody else who might be let's say, who's a Venezuelan refugee in Denver right now, who's emigrated from, you know, their own challenging situations, or even just similar situations that maybe aren't even exactly about being a refugee. What's a learning you have that you would apply in the future, or you would recommend to somebody else going through circumstances kind of like yours?
You asked me this question last time. be a good person. People are still good. There are good people out there. Just be positive and keep pushing.
I like that. I appreciate that.
And she's probably one of the best people I know. She's super nice to everybody.
That's why I'm here, because I couldn't say no.
she's really nice to me.
Really nice. Yeah, to be back a second time.
And for those of you at home that don't realize this, she was not excited about the idea of coming on a podcast, but she has such a unique and such a wonderful story to tell. We had to have her back and make sure that we got that on.
Yeah.
Something that I learned over the course of these two recordings is that perseverance is key, right? Everybody's story doesn't look alike. Everybody's story doesn't sound alike.
Right.
But perseverance is something that is universal. And if you can persevere through any of the challenges that are in front of you, whether that be walking for 2 days, whether that's learning English, whether that is just surviving, if you can persevere, you can succeed. And I think that is something that is overwhelmingly clear from Vesna's story.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I, you know, this has been, even for me, for very different reasons, you know, navigating personal job changes and transitions with career and, you know, uncertainties and changes in that space. You know, I think my reflection is similar, both in hearing your story and your advice and recommendations, and same with yours, Jamel, is this idea that's really been kind of my recent mantra, is that it's the journey, not the destination. Is that as soon as you picture like getting to that place or that moment or that accomplishment, then it will feel as if you've satisfied this long-term goal. And I think your story just illuminates that you had so many literal destinations that just continue to be part of another stop on this journey. It could have been, I hit this refugee camp, now things are good. I got to America, I got to this apartment, now it's good. Now I got to this school, now, like, it's the journey. And I think that we get so fixated on overcoming challenges by saying, I will solve it, it will be solved, it will be resolved, and I'll never have to worry about that again, and it will be good every point from here on forward. And that's just not true.
Nope.
And I think that life is a good example of just saying that if you can persevere and keep going, which sounds so simple and frankly sometimes sounds like it's contrived advice, it's really fucking real advice. It's really just keep going. I'm hearing you saying it, and it's good for me right now. It's good for our listeners who might be going through their own stuff. It's good for people who, you know, are navigating challenges or who've gone through things. And just keep going.
Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy.
Mm.
Shout out to my brother, Sean White.
Hey, Sean.
Sean White, the snowboarder?
No.
No.
What are we saying?
I'm going to leave it at that.
Sean White?
Yeah. Just don't even worry about it, Josh.
Get that reference.
I'm gonna open it up to Vezzy to give any closing thoughts.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's a good one. Thank you for
having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. I was really excited to know that you were willing to do this. Thanks for working through our burgeoning show. I read this stat the other day, and I'm going to name it into existence, that 99% of podcasts don't get past 21 episodes. We're going to get past 21 episodes.
What episode is this?
This 11. Is 11. We're more than halfway there.
We've got to be more than 11. This is 11 for this season, right?
And it's 12 technically, 12 recordings.
Oh, then yeah.
11 published episodes. We're going to keep going, though, and getting good people on the show who can share about themselves and their stories is, it gives me purpose and it gives me joy to hear and learn from new people. And so thank you for coming back, Jamel. Thanks for the connection. And to our listeners, thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this recording. And until next time.
Thank you.
Shout out to my sister, Shanae, for being
emotional support.
And thanks to Jamie for getting this show dialed in. And
no power outages.
All right. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.